That's what they're talking about.
Right, and I
already talked about it. Paging Mrs. Sheffer and Mr. Quisenberry. Mrs. Sheffer and Mr. Quisenberry, please report to your assigned seats.
Okay.
You're tardy, Mr. Miller. Okay, so good evening and welcome to the March 15th, 2011 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of
I move for approval of the amended March 1st minutes.
Okay, we have a motion for those. Do we have a second? Motion by Mr. Angel, second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Let's see. Then we also have minutes from, I believe. No, we don't have a second set of minutes. Okay. Let's move on then to, well, student. And we do. We have a student magically appearing. We have a student representative. Welcome. Welcome. No, no problem. So you're from Pacific Beach, I take it. Could you introduce yourself and go for it?
I'm Seth Williams from Pacific Beach High School.
Oh, hey, Seth. Yeah. Do you know how to turn the mic on? Up there at the... Can you show him, Jim? Thanks.
Oh, there it is. Testing. All right. Like I said, I'm Seth Williams from Pacific Beach High School. We just started our fourth marking period, and 80% of our students achieved their credit goals last marking period of 9 credits or more. And our art teacher and science teacher, Ms. Jacobson's class, did a puppet show for a local preschool. They had put on Winnie the Pooh and some other plays, and the kids loved it. And we graduated 4 students just last week, and there's 2 more planning to graduate this week. And we would like to say congratulations to Slow High for winning the mock trial competition, and also, yeah, that's pretty much about it.
Thank you, Seth. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
And as always, just so that you know, are you going to be our representative for a while? Hopefully.
Okay.
I have 2 more credits to till I graduate.
Great, congratulations! Yeah.
All with my portfolio. So.
I'll take that as a no. but do know that you're welcome to stay, and you're actually welcome to sit up here with us if there are any items on the agenda that you particularly would like to weigh in on. We'd love to hear your opinion on them. So if that's something you'd like to do, otherwise we understand if you'd like to leave too. That's fine.
I'll be with the Project Citizen class from Pacific Beach, so I'll just sit there.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
So that said, let's move on then to our presentations, and our next presentation is the Pacific Beach High School Project Citizen, Mr. Dowler, and Mr. Aranguea. Thank you, Jeff. And I don't see Mr. Dowler here, so...
Good evening, board members. I'm Charlotte Lopez-Shermer, and I am the Congressional District Coordinator for Project Citizen for this area. I'm also a resident of San Luis Obispo. And we thought we would start tonight with me just giving you a brief overview of what Project Citizen is, and then letting the group from Pacific Beach High go into what they've done. Project Citizen is an instructional program for middle and high school grade students and members of youth groups, promoting competent and responsible participation in local and state government. It helps young people learn how to influence and monitor public policy. It is run by the Center for Civic Education, which is located in Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. It is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. It's funded by Congress on an annual basis through the Education for Democracy Act. So what happens in Project Citizens is entire classes or youth groups come together and look at a public policy that they want to review. They then come up with alternative solutions to the policy, develop their own solutions, and create an action plan for implementation of the policy. Since Project Citizen began in 1995, more than 16,000 students across the country have participated, 16,000 teachers, and nearly 1 million students. All training and curriculum is provided free of charge by the center to the teachers. That is just a brief overview. If you have further questions, I'll be happy to answer them. But at this time, I'm going to introduce to you Jeff Aranguena from Pacific Beach High School to tell you what the students have done. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. I won't take too much of your time. I just kind of want to go over the process a little bit. This is the first time we've ever done something like this at PB, and it's kind of a new, exciting program to get the students involved. We have four students here tonight that are actually going to present to you guys, but we had over the marking period, I think, a total of 24 students involved in this process, you know, identifying the problem, gathering information, examining other solutions, and then, of course, developing an action plan, and then finally proposing this public policy. So the last 8 weeks have been quite a roller coaster of a ride. We've had
as you know, I'm Seth Williams. And first of all, I don't think public policy is dry at all. I think it's pretty cool. But we would just like to talk about the problem. And the problem that we are talking about today is that many districts across the country have, including LCUSD. And it's an outdated and vague cell phone policy. It's a problem that must be faced quickly due to the rapid expansion of technology. Now, the argument against cell phones has always been that they are a distraction to students and teachers. In the 21st century, cell phones and other electronics allow students potential access to information which can be helpful in a classroom setting. Yet, current policy makes that resource unavailable to students as well as teachers. The current policy that is in place district-wide does not give adequate consequences for unauthorized cell phone use, nor does it allow teachers to permit the use of cell phones during educational instruction. So the conclusion that we came to as a class is that the current cell phone policy is outdated and vague. Upcoming generations are going to have access to endless amounts of information from cell phones, and this information that could be useful in the classroom. And the district needs a policy that is relevant to the times, and teachers should be able to regulate the use of cell phones for educational purposes in the classroom. It is a necessary change that must be made in order to utilize the latest technology for educational benefits, as well as providing proper consequences to discourage students from using cell phones during unauthorized times. Now, we have some graphs up here. As you can see, it shows that older teens are more likely to own cell phones, but also you can notice the rapid growth of the amount of people that are owning cell phones as the years go. In 2004, if you were 12 years old, only 15% of 12-year-olds had cell phones, but now a surprising number in 2008 is 50%, and that just increases as students get older. And now in this graph, you can see that people with access to technology ages 8 to 16, most of their technology access is coming from mobile phones and mobile devices, because those are what's available to teenagers and adolescents during these times. Now, their home access and owning a computer is much lower than mobile phones, because that's just showing how quickly things are changing, and cell phones are becoming a major part of our society today. And how people access news, like say you were in a class and you wanted to access article or something in a paper, you could look it up through a cell phone when maybe not everyone in the class would have access to a computer. And the how people accessed the news in 2008, the most was cell phone usage. Newspapers and magazines and radio are much lower nowadays, and wireless devices and cell phones are the highest, as well as the internet on the PC. So now I'll hand it off to Adi, and he'll have what he
has to say. Hello, my name is Lottie Rafeman, and I'll be presenting part two of our Project Citizen. The district policy is very lenient and allows every administrator of other schools to create their own school policy. We're trying to lay down one basic policy for every school. In Laguna and Los Osos Middle School, both of the schools don't allow cell phone use until after school. What about emergencies? The parent has to call the school. They don't have the school number. They have to look it online. Takes more time. Yeah. San Luis High and Morro Bay High mentioned about pagers and CD players, showing that it's outdated and how we have with our technology's rapid growth into cell phones being able to access how Seth Williams has told you today, articles and could help, and yeah. And the Texas policy, we were a little bit overboard here, but we looked all the way into Texas, and Texas goes a little bit overboard. We're not going to go that far. They charge a whole $15 on confiscation, and then on second confiscation, they charge your parents. Don't want to be that kid's parents. Thank you. I'll be letting Kamari go now.
Hello. My name is Kamari Clemens, and be assigned two detentions, and the parent would have to come by and pick up the phone. And if caught for the third time, he or she would be suspended, and the student's parent would have to come up for a conference. And we intend to make the consequences for the classroom policy more distinct than the ones on the campus, because we wanted to emphasize the privilege of using the cell phone in the classroom and discourage, at the same time, inappropriate use. And also, we wanted to permit the students a chance to use their phones in class when the teachers allocate the time in their lesson, and also give the teachers an opportunity to incorporate the newer age of technology into their lesson, creating more teachable moments. Now I'm going to hand it off to Aaron.
Now, before I get started, I just want to apologize really quickly. Some people don't understand the meaning of busy. So I'm shutting up my cell phone. I just want to say good job to my three fellow students. I'm going to be starting you off with going over the action plan and the five steps within it. The first step, since we didn't have enough time to conduct a survey, we ask the board members to do one. And the main people you might want to, you know, survey are site administrators or teachers. Now, the second step would be for the district to adopt the district for all of the schools, not the district and then the schools go off and do their own thing, to adopt our plan, our policy that we're proposing to you. We think that would be the best. The third one would be for all of the secondary schools to adopt this unilateral new cell phone policy. The fourth step would be for all of you to hold a an open night conference for all the students, all the parents, about this cell phone policy. And the last step is for all the students to receive information on this new policy on the first day of school. Now, we've been doing this for eight weeks. We've come across so many blurs, so many inconsistencies, as they've been saying. We aim to fix that. We aim to make this policy significantly more up-to-date while keeping it strict. We don't want to just sit around in our classes all day texting buddies in the next room over, even the next school. We want to be able to use their cell phones as a great source of information. Because I have a friend who has a smartphone, and he can get on the internet 10 times faster than I can hop on the computer, log on, and have everything load up. That just doesn't seem efficient. So we believe that we have this policy, and we really recommend this policy, and we really hope all of you feel that this policy is the right one. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks to Seth, Adi, Kumari, and Aaron. Are there board members that have questions?
Yeah.
Mrs. Sheffer.
I have a question. Early on when you had your graphs that showed how many people own cell phones, technology access, where did you get that data to make those graphs?
That's probably a question better answered by Mr. Angley.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm not really, I don't have all the information.
That's a good point. When we put this thing together, as I mentioned earlier, we had about 20 to 24 people do this entire project. So we had the presenters are here tonight, and we don't have the rest of the people here, but there are individuals that their goal and their job was to get information, provide this information, redo the graphs. So where they got their main sources of information was off of the internet, off of, you know, sites that I looked over to ensure that I thought that they were, you know, legit sites. So
So they don't necessarily pertain to San Luis Coastal.
No, it's not. It's not a survey or anything like that that was
okay.
conducted here.
Yeah, I just was curious as to whether these numbers reflect what the technology access is in our school district or teens owning cell phones is in our district.
That's a good question.
Okay, thank you.
As you discuss this, and actually you talked about you have a friend that's got a smartphone with access. And what I'm wondering is, as you rely and as you suggest and as I agree with, that we use the modern technology more and more for educational reasons, is there an equity issue?
What do you mean?
If I have a smartphone and you don't, and we're going to rely on cell phones.
We don't have to rely solely on cell phones. It's just it's a lot easier because we have four computers in our classroom. You know, if all those four computers get used up, he has to send.
There could be questions about equality of access. Was that something you guys talked about? Because I think that's a huge issue.
That did come up, but me personally and everybody else who worked on it, we didn't really see a big issue on that. It's like. Some people have a smartphone, you know. Oh, well, other people don't. They can use the computer. But why, if you have a smartphone, why should you not be allowed to use it? And I do understand that it, you know, goes past the blocks. Some people, you know, they don't get blocked, and that could be an issue. We talked about, you know, if the teacher, and this is if the teacher allows it, the teacher has the choice. If the teacher says, all right, we can use our smartphones, instead of us being under the table where they can't see what we're doing, it's on the desk, and they can come over. No, everybody does it. Everybody texts under the table. I'm not going to BS any of you. But no, the point is it's going to be on the table, and Mr. A can come over our shoulders.
Trick,
and
you know,
yeah, right.
Yeah. Something for
me. No. Did you have a question, Mr. Quick? No, this is great.
It's not just the fact that we're trying to get you to adopt our policy.
Right.
It's the fact that it's an issue that needs to be faced overall because, as you can see, like technology is expanding. It's just it's growing and growing and growing, and students are getting more access. They just came out with a $50 iPhone. You know that. I mean, there's. It's becoming to the point where a lot of people are going to be able to access smartphones and have access and have the money for that. And we understand, of course, there's going to be some people that can't, you know, but the fact is, like, it's as it grows, the policy is going to have to just be changed as it grows, you know, because a policy can never keep up with technology, as Mr. Quesbury told us when we had that meeting. Yeah, it's but it's just an issue that needs to be addressed.
Cool. Other questions, Mr. Angel?
Appreciate your
appreciate the fact that you guys did talk about the equity issue. Something we grapple with on the regular.
I really appreciate the amount of work you guys put into this. It's really well thought out. What led you guys to pick cell phones?
We surveyed the class in a way, like during class, and just found out what everyone was interested in because we wanted something that everyone could get engaged in that wasn't, you know, something that teenagers would care about, you know. So cell phones is, you know, it's our thing nowadays, I guess.
Not that we want to just sit around and text in class. I can wait. I mean, 3 hours of school, come on.
But we did have a class before actually developing our plan, just going over many different problems. And you know, we looked at a lot of different problems. We looked at hunger. We looked at homelessness and stuff like that in our county. It wasn't, you know, it was just something that we came to as a unified body, you know, just that something we could all get engaged in, involved.
And we narrowed it down from a list of things and concentrated it into the presentation that we have today.
Well, thank you. The process sounded so interesting and I just exciting.
And I just want to comment. I think it's interesting that you narrowed it down from things that are more global with which you may have had an impact to something that, in fact, you could bring to your, you know, local governing board and perhaps see an actual change in the way policy is done on a local level and things that would affect you students.
Yeah, I mean, and we all wanted to, like, cure cancer or, you know, end world hunger, but we don't. But that also came out of what we decided, you know, something that's possible.
Yeah.
Possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Other questions?
Chris?
Dr. Prater, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Gentlemen, I have Seth. Is it Adi?
Yeah.
Adi? Tamari?
Kamari.
Oh, Kamari. And I didn't get your name. I wrote you down as the closer.
Yeah.
But
Aaron Albertson. I didn't introduce. I don't think I introduced myself as Aaron Albertson. Did I?
No.
No. Well,
okay.
He did.
So what strikes me about your presentation, about your whole data set here that you presented, is that it's entirely honest. And what I struggle with, and I have for a long time, is that I get this feeling that that young adults in our schools are sort of tolerating us adults.
To a point.
And I know you like most of us. I get it. But I have this strong opinion that you're tolerating us. And what...
Okay, let's move on to correspondence. We did receive one piece of correspondence. It was from Dr. Julian Crocker, the County Superintendent of Schools. He wrote us a letter regarding our first interim report on the budget. Just a couple of highlights. He pointed out, he looked at our enrollment and said that we expect to see some slight declines in our enrollment. We believe that we're going to be able to, at least this year, maintain basic aid status, although who knows what's happening given the state, and I'm sure we'll hear more from Mr. Miller about that. Looked at our collective bargaining agreements. He commended us for our fiscal prudence and our ability to maintain reserves based on the unforeseen state budget. And then he concurred with our he approved our positive certification. And if I may finish, and I can read his last paragraph, he said, "I share your commitment to quality education for all students in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District." So thank you, Dr. Crocker. Thank you, Mrs. Lang, and everybody that was involved in that. And thanks to the district for helping make sure that we maintain our fiscal solvency. Let's move on to public comment. And at this time, we have two people. And again, public comment is for anything that anybody would like to address the board on that's within the purview of the school. So we have two people that have turned in the yellow forms. The first is Jennifer Codron from Los Osos, and she's speaking to us about the Monarch Grove Children's Garden. And then following her would be Lori Olson, also speaking to us about the Monarch Grove Children's Garden.
Good evening, school board members and administrators. As you said, my name is Jennifer Codron, and I'm one of two volunteer school garden coordinators at Monarch Grove in Los Osos. 4 years ago, together with parents, teachers, and community members, we began the creation of the children's garden. What was a dismal, unused portion of the school grounds has become a vibrant garden where children plant, explore, and learn lessons. It has taken many hours and resources to become the outdoor classroom we had envisioned. 2 weeks ago, we learned the district may have other plans for this area. The children's garden would become a playground for a new preschool program at Monarch Grove. The district has offered to move the garden to another location on campus if they proceed with this plan. In my opinion, it is not an easy task to move a garden. The children's garden is a product of the process of a process and many years of hard work and dedication. The development of the existing garden, while supported by the work of many, is the product of a few parents who have shown extraordinary commitment to the project. We have spent countless hours acquiring grants, researching agricultural techniques, and seeking consultation with many experts in the field during this process. After 5 years, we have finally reached a maintenance level that provides us with more time to work with the kids with planting and harvesting and growing and cooking. It is my strong suggestion that before any decision is made to remove the existing garden and rebuild a new one, a plan should be put in place with the commitment of the principal as well as the teachers to support a new garden. Without this support, a new garden will not take off. As our children move on, the parents who have made the garden what it is today will also be moving on. Who will step up and lead the effort to support a bigger and better garden in the years to come? I hope the district and the school board will support our desire for a thorough investigation into the nuts and bolts of creating and sustaining a school garden before tearing this one out and planting a new one. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Codron. Lori Olson?
Hello to all of you this evening. My name is Lori Olson. I am a parent volunteer at the Monarch Grove Elementary School in Los Osos, and Jennifer Codron is my partner in crime. We are the two coordinators of the children's garden at the school at Monarch Grove. And I have just a couple of items that I want to basically reiterate that Jennifer has touched upon. First of all, the moving of the garden. We've been told that if this process should proceed, the garden will be moved and it will become a bigger, better garden than it even is today. I would just like all of you to know and realize the complex nature of moving the garden. It will take years and years for a new space to equal what the current space has become today. Secondly, it's imperative that if this should happen, that the school district has the commitment from, and they're going to tour our garden, and we would love to show them where we've been and where we hope to go with it, and perhaps what some of the problems that they might run into if they proceed with taking out the existing garden for the preschool. And finally, I brought for you a quick 9-minute slideshow that we prepared of the first 3 years of the garden at Monarch Grove. It chronicles from day one, the day we put the first spade shovel in the ground and took the first chunk of soil out, up till 3 years later with all the children and their involvement and some other activities that were related to the garden that also took place on campus. So I would like to leave these CDs with you. And a photo of where the current garden stands.
Great. Thank you very much, Mrs. Olson. If you would give those things to Mrs. Holmes, and she'll make sure that they get given to the board. And thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Chris, can I just...
Yes, of course, Mr. Brown.
Dr. Perry, what day is that visit? Do you know?
This Thursday.
Okay. And do you have a time?
About 10 a.m.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to speak to the board at this time on any issue? Mr. Bedrigan.
Bruce Bedrigan, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association President. I want to thank the board for all of the hard work and tough decisions they've had to make in the past and currently as we're moving through this year. But one of the things I wanted to say before I get started was the Pacific Beach presentation. I was really moved by that, and I do agree with the students that our cell phone policy is outdated, needs to be looked at again. And the last person who spoke, Aaron, the closer, I saw him last year present poetry out loud and read his poetry, other poetry and poetry out loud. And I just predict that he is going to be a professional speaker someday. He's got that voice that is amazing. But I come here today because I'm with a little bit of a heavy heart, because I'm thinking, one, as a teacher who spent more than half of his life in this district, I'm kind of disappointed at this time that the board is, at a time when you're considering cutting teacher positions, that you've gone ahead and decided to add two positions to upper management that are 600 that are six-figure plus salaries, and I just think I have some concerns about that. I think that could be five new teachers. It could be lowering class size. It could be doing other things in our district that I think we need. I think the school board needs to set an example. As you well know, teachers didn't take a raise last year. They didn't receive anything. They're talking about how their salaries are eroding, that they're making less money than they did last year at a time when everything seems to be inflated, especially in San Luis Obispo. And we understand the hard times, but we're looking at the money that this district has, and we'd hope that you would think about spending that money in a way that is going to benefit students and make this district be a shining light in this county. That sometimes we do things that we don't have to do, but we do them because they're the right things to do. And it may be an altruistic gesture, but I'm hoping that, and I do have a lot of respect for each one of you, so, and I've talked with you, so I just wanted to share maybe it's time to go ahead and also look at your policies as far as spending, and maybe this is the time to start spending some of the money that you've been holding in reserves. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who'd like to speak to the board at this time? Okay, seeing no one, we'll move on then to superintendent's updates, status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, board members. Julie's going to help me with this one tonight, and the main emphasis of what's happening at the state level was the news today that the state legislature has called for a vote on the governor's proposal for a budget for 2011-2012 that is scheduled. California education, everybody is going to face, will be somewhat catastrophic in scope, and the necessitate a redo of how a lot of people are doing business right now with children. So we look forward to tomorrow's vote. We hope that there's a couple of Republicans who will vote with conscience about letting the voters decide how they want their tax structure to look into the future. And if we get that kind of a commitment from Republicans, I think we have a very positive outlook for the future come June. And what I want to do now is turn it over to Julie, and she'll do the first part of this.
Aren't you? Okay. I can. I thought you were doing the first burn. Okay. So we learned last week that we're looking at an additional cut to our budget, the basic aid fair share portion. And we learned that the method they used to come to this 8.92% for next year is they took the 08-09 cut and the 9-10 cut, added those together, that the revenue limit districts got off of their base revenue limit. Do you want to go over the current budget proposal?
Yeah. The budget that we're talking about that's going to be voted on tomorrow has got these significant issues in it. The initial reduction to PUP 98 is $2.1 billion. I want to stress all of these issues are related to the proposal that's in front of the legislature tomorrow. This isn't what's going to happen if they don't have an election in June. This brings the total amount deferred for education under Prop 98 to $9.1 billion, or 21% of all Prop 98 money is being withheld by the state of California. Prop 98 was a constitutional guarantee of a floor of funding that's part of our Constitution, a floor of funding for education. The second point is that it extends program flexibility for categorical for two additional years. Right now, restricted funding coming for such programs as class size reduction, SIP, textbooks, all have a certain flexibility attached to them that we can spend them on unrestricted purposes, and we'll get that flexibility for two more years. It puts $80 million into AB 3632 mental health services. We've spent some time talking about the impact of the Governor Schwarzenegger's cut to the mental health services, and that's been significant. $80 million isn't a full funding model, but it is going to be helpful for sure. Puts $89.9 million into mandated cost reimbursement. We got some significant money for mandated costs this year for the first time in three or four years, and if we get the $89.9 million committed to mandated costs, that's going to be very welcome money for us because it comes unrestricted, and they're holding over $1 million of our mandated cost reimbursement money at this time. Do you know how much it is?
How much have we received?
No, how much is still being held by the state? Okay, it's over $1 million. Eliminates the Office of the Secretary of Education. I'm not hearing too much crying about that. Yeah. Repeals the authority for redevelopment agencies to collect property taxes. So that will be a huge blow to the cities who depend upon redevelopment funding for modernizing and upgrading their interdistrict facilities. So that's a very controversial piece.
Okay, now we'll get into the nitty-gritty of what these numbers mean. The 8.92% is taken off of this year's second interim revenue limit amount. So our revenue limit amount for this year would be $6,364. Our estimated ADA at P2 is going to be $6,899. And you multiply that by the 8.92%, and we're looking at $3.9 million cut for next year. And this assumes that the tax extensions do pass. So worst case scenario, if they don't pass, we're looking at the potential of another $349 per student cut, which equates to about 5.48% or $2.4 million. So the potential reduction next year could be as high as $6,324. And just to show you a list of if you can see that, of what we receive now, these are the potential programs that would be cut to fund this reduction. We get about $7 million in state funding that could be cut. If we take the balance after the 8.92% reduction, we'd still have $3 million that would be funded. But if we look at the worst-case scenario, we'd only get about $866,000 from the state.
If you take a look at all of those programs up there, that represents all of the money that we get from the state of California. And that would be all subject. No, it's just they're taking our money.
Well, we wouldn't get. We'd have to take it somewhere else.
We'd have to do the special ed. We'd have to do the STAR test. There's some mandates that you can't get away from.
I'm looking at this, and you talked about redevelopment. And I have to honestly say, is there any redevelopment money in any of our areas within our district?
Not for San Luis Coastal.
Okay. And so have we ever dealt with redevelopment or?
You know, inside of our district, not in the last 10 years.
Okay, because I'd like to just point out that around the state, redevelopment money is supposed to also be used in those areas by school districts, and it's often been a battle by school districts to get access to redevelopment money. So it's always interesting.
Can I just interrupt? And I think, Mark, that when you talk about that, that's something that Lucia Marr has seen over within about the past year, as a matter of fact.
Lucia Marr and Lompoc both have been basically cut out of redevelopment funding. Some of these were cut last year, and does this represent those full cuts funding, or are these additional cuts?
No, this is full funding. This doesn't include the 5.81% cuts that
okay,
we
these, this is what we get now.
No.
What,
this is
sorry.
What we would have gotten had we not had the reduction okay. this year.
Okay.
So full yes. funding equals what we should have gotten. What we really got was some of those programs were reduced in order to meet our 5.81% fair share of pain in 2010-2011.
Okay. There's a couple up here I'm not quite sure. They're mandated, but they're like sort of in the – I thought they were in the non-hit list. And Cassie, I thought, was one of those for sure. And they're now putting it – so everything's up for grabs at this point?
There were four
the three
programs.
Tiers. There were three tiers, I think.
Child nutrition is right. exempt. After school.
There's an after school program.
After school program that was exempt. Special ed is no longer exempt. Might have been one more. But
and there's one more. There were three programs which they have excluded. Everything else is fair game.
Okay, so the three-tier system, that's gone.
For the purposes of them taking their money, it's gone.
Okay.
For the purposes of us having flexibility, that's what the three okay. tiers was all about. The flexibility or inflexibility still is in existence until after this current budget passes, and then it'll be some changes okay. if it passes.
Thanks. This is rather enlightening.
So my question has to do with unfunded mandates, and that means that showing up there, say STAR testing is hit, where we must still provide it, CASI, special ed. So it's really kind of a double hit because the money's taken away, but then we still have to take money someplace else.
That's exactly
so
right.
we could be losing money. We could already be losing some money from deferred maintenance, but we're even going to take more, for example, if that's how we chose to do it, to then fund CASI, which is required by the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the way the unfunded mandate system has worked for a number of years now. The Education Mandate Network just won a court case against the state of California in that the old methodology they used to minimize payments on mandate costs was to give each district or to allocate $1,000 statewide and give each district's pennies of that $1,000, and then they said, we're making our payments on the mandated costs, you have to continue to give the service. Well, now the lawsuit was taken to the court, and the court agreed that the $1,000 was inadequate, that they must fund the mandate or legislate to drop it. So there's going to be a change, and since that court case was only decided last week, a lot of the details are still missing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll see what happens tomorrow. Dr. Prater?
Thank you, Russell and Julie. I appreciate that, I think. What I'd like to open up now is I asked Jackie Kirk Martinez to present with Rita some of the surveys or the information that I think is important for us to gather as we enter into next year that I've learned through my work with Dr. Tony Wagner out of Harvard. He does a lot of work around the nation. In particular, he recommends these two programs, or at least these two elements, to add to our ability to develop our database as a school district. So, Jackie?
I'd like to start by saying Bruce Bedrygian said, you know, we need to look at some of our funding and our money and And I think this may be one way where we utilize our money to drive instruction based on what it really looks at, the attitudes, the perceptions, and the beliefs that the students have at the high school and their interactions in the schools. Then the results help to drive better instruction and how to establish and really have an intentional culture of care. They will come to us and work with our school sites, our team leaders, as well as our counselors and our PLCs, to then take a look at what can we do to change our high schools to really increase the engagement and the support for the students. A middle school survey is being developed and will be released relatively soon. That small little Scantron up there, if I enlarged it, it would be very blurry. So I took a sample of some of the questions, and it's on different scales. Some of them rank them, you know, how many hours of homework or how many hours of school are you, how many hours are you in school, how many hours a day do you do homework, and where do you do homework, and what subjects do you do homework in the majority of the time. But then there's how do you feel, and it's on a Likert scale. How do you feel about school? And then they ask the next question, I care about this school. So I feel good about school in general. I care about this school. So then it's specific to that high school. I am treated fairly in school. And there is at least one adult in this school who knows me well. That's just a sample. I thought it was interesting, one of the respondents that they have on the website is, when I'm not engaged, it is because the work is not intellectually engaging. So if we were to get results that showed some high results in that area, what do we need to do to help better the engagement? They also provide a variety of data that is given back to us. And this means nothing to us if we look at means and the probability and the effects. So they come and they work with us and give us suggestions. They help us to understand, us meaning the school sites, and the students. What does this data really mean? They break it down with different gender populations, the grade levels, the ethnicity. They ask questions, have you ever thought of dropping out and why? So they have areas where they can actually comment. And this goes to the survey that we just completed with the initiatives, where we got a lot of feedback from just the narratives. So they're able to write in a lot of the narratives, and then the national survey pulls that information out and puts it into a very comprehensive report. This would be done annually. So the ultimate goal of this survey is to document, describe, and then strengthen the student engagement so that we look at the purposeful activities. They can rank some of the activities throughout the school year. We can make it specific to the site as well as the general survey. And it provides information that can be used to generate discussions on teaching and learning and guiding students to improve the activities. So we wanted just to present this to you because we think it may be a very valuable tool to start using next year. We talked to the principals already about this survey and had them go through some of the questions and how might they use this in the schools. It's a little bit different, well, it's quite a bit different than the California Healthy Kids Survey because it goes deeper and it goes into the middle school, high school, empowering them, how they're feeling safe. It's not focusing on a specific area, but it's very comprehensive. Any questions that you might have that I could answer, or maybe Dr. Prater can answer?
Well, you answered part of my question about how does it compare to the Healthy Kids Survey. Mm-hmm. Is our intention here to replace the Healthy Kids Survey with this? Is it in addition to the Healthy Kids Survey?
We haven't discussed that in depth yet. However, the Healthy Kids Survey focuses, on certain grade levels. And we could potentially use it in the elementary schools, whereas we can use this one in the middle school and high school. That's just an idea, a suggestion, but we haven't discussed whether we're going to not use the Healthy Kids Survey. That hasn't even been discussed yet.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Jackie. That was great. I missed at the beginning, I think, as I opened my water bottle. Is this a public agency or private company? And that would lead to a second question. Is there a cost associated?
There is a cost associated with it, yes.
So for our district, it would be?
$4,800.
$4,800?
Yes.
Okay.
Annual. Is to create a national data pool to, very different than the California Healthy Kids Survey. This, the purpose of this survey, as I understand it, is to provide critical instructional information back to the sites for the principals, site teams, departments, grade level teams to look and examine, do their kids feel engaged? And in what areas do they feel engaged? And what areas do they do? Are they not engaged? So it's really a means by which to pull back, using the student voice, so to speak, pull back and examine, where are we? How do the as a department, we might think we're doing great. How do the kids feel we're doing in these particular domains? Or as a principal, it might be, how do the kids feel when they walk down the halls? Do they feel connected to adults? It's all those things. It's meant as a tool for the whole team, the whole professional learning community team, to improve engagement for kids, to really examine activities they're doing, things that they're doing that are relevant and meaningful to kids in the eyes and language of kids. In terms of drug use and all that, I believe that's a secondary piece to this, not a primary piece. The primary piece is to aid in the improvement of engaging kids at school, primarily in the classrooms. That's what this is.
Chris, no, I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
When in the school year is this typically given?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Well, the principals asked that, and I'm not. One principal suggested, well, I'd rather give this in the fall. And then another, after we talked about it, we all agreed that the better time to give this is in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Once the kids have an entire year to sort of reflect on where they're at, what they did, what worked, what didn't work. In fact, after speaking with Will and Dan Andres, they'll be going, Slow High will be going through their WASC review next year. Morro Bay is going through it this year, and so Morro Bay is going to give this spring, as will Slo High, and they can use that within their WASC review process. So it lines beautifully. In terms of the middle school, the survey hasn't been completed yet, so we could be first in line if they have it ready. Otherwise, we'll get it going next year.
So then part two of that is, how long does it generally take to receive results back?
I'm not sure yet. We are in the initial phases, but once I wanted to present it to you, Jackie.
The report does say that it 2 to 3 months. That it could take as long as 2 to 3 months, but it depends on if all the schools are doing it at the same time. But for the students, even though it's a very comprehensive assessment or survey, it only takes them 30 minutes, and it's written in their language that they can understand, and it's, we've had some questions, and not so much criticisms, but questions about how did the students really perceive that question on the Healthy Kids Survey. These are broken down, and the students provided the feedback on how they would want these surveys worded to be very meaningful to their college, to their peers. So that's really critical as well, to get valid data.
Thank you.
I'm going back to my original question. Did either of the conference of high school principals express any concerns about giving both of these surveys within a year?
They didn't.
No. Okay. In fact, I asked about that. And what I was told was that there are there's a specific schedule given, a survey day schedule, where they're given an extended period to complete the surveys. So, no, it wasn't expressed as a concern.
And I would think that the first year of implementation, they would want to compare and see, because we haven't ever given this. So, you know, we would want to see the what's going on and what the results look like and how it is going to better our education.
Well, as an old English teacher, most of these types of things fall to the English class, because every student has an English class at the secondary level. So a lot of class time is devoted to the Healthy Kids Survey, and then if we add additional surveys, that does impact class time. So I just wanted to give you that response.
Thank you. We'll consider that when we look at both of those. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Jackie?
I know that this one is allowed in California. I think we would need to get, like we do with the California Healthy Kids Survey, get permission from the high school, from the parents.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Jackie, thank you.
Thank you.
If I would like to have Rita present to you another Dr. Tony Wagner recommendation, which is the National Student Clearinghouse data. So, Rita, go ahead.
Okay. This is a nonprofit organization that organizes this, and you'll see in a minute that the cost is relatively low. What we would be able to do would be to contract and have use of this student tracker. We'd be able to find out what our students do after they leave us. Do they complete two-year or four-year degrees? Do they go to vocational schools? Do they go and then leave and then come back? And so what Jackie was presenting is for our current students. This would be for students who have already left us. As you can see there, it's nationwide. It would cost us about $850 annually. We would only have to pay for San Luis Obispo High School and Morro Bay High School, and they would allow us to, well, they would provide the information for Pacific Beach High School students for free. Covers about 92% of all our U.S. college enrollment. I already mentioned areas, and Mr. Buckman, you talked about permissions. It complies with FERPA. And so what I did was I brought a couple of slides, three slides, to show you. There is a report that's about 36 pages long that they can provide for us. Here's an example of the first one. They would be able to tell us what percent of our students enrolled in college the fall immediately following graduation from high school. And you can see there at the bottom the different institutions, okay, four-year, two-year are all together, and what percentage of the students from 2001 to 2008. So this is an example, you know, a sample USA high school. Here's another chart that they provide, percent of students enrolled in college the first year after high school who returned for a second year. Okay, and as you can see, the percentages, if you can make it through the first year, I guess your chances of staying on for a second year are pretty good. Oh, maybe there are four charts. Percent of high school graduates with a college degree, okay, over the past 3 years by their different levels. And then this last one is very interesting. They take a class, and they stay with that class. You know, they provide longitudinal data, letting you know the orange is how many actually graduated from college. Those new, retained, those who return after having left. The green is those who are no longer enrolled and didn't graduate. And then the purple up on top is those who were never in this data set because they didn't go to college. So this is an example. It'll be interesting to see what kind of data we'll gather for our students. I know in some of the feedback we received on the initiatives, somebody mentioned that. Wouldn't it be good to know what's going on with our students? And we have CalPAS, but it isn't quite set
I'm
in
sorry,
California.
Can you say that again?
CalPAS.
Oh, Cal. I thought you said HealthPass.
No. CalPAS is supposed to help us this way, track some of our students as they move on, but we're having some difficulties there right now. Any questions you have or comments?
Ellen?
Mark was first.
He's hiding his light.
Go ahead, Mark.
You were.
Thanks. This sounds really exciting, and especially to be part of an entire national clearinghouse sounds really. Am I wrong? But isn't there something now where we're supposed to track our high school graduates?
Yes, I think that's CalPAS.
And that's the CalPAS, and this would then replace.
Well, CalPAS isn't quite set in place right now. Our Department of Education is having some problems with the company.
Something new in California. And then just if I can follow, this will take care of our college ones, our college graduates, but we still will have, and this is just my pet peeve, we still won't know about trades and associations, or does this also?
How many kids enter college after high school, 2-year or 4-year, and complete their degree?
Right.
That's my understanding of this. So what it does is it gives us a picture of when the students leave us, how many of them drop out after the first year, how many of them complete their 2-year degree but don't go on to 4-year. It's my understanding, unless we find out otherwise, it's less about vocation, it's more about determining who enters 2-year and 4-year schools and actually complete it. So it's a longitudinal piece.
That's valid. I appreciate that. And I know it's something that, you know, I've heard for years out in the community is what happens to our kids when they leave us. You know, does anyone follow up? Is there any, you know, the title kind of sounds like you're putting a GPS chip in them or something. But I think that that's really valid information to have. And Mark, I would say that sometimes with a 2-year degree, it could be a vocational degree from a 2-year institution. So
right.
I think you get some of that. I'm always curious about those students who choose not to go to school. So what happens to them? But thank you.
I'm going to just continue this conversation, I think, and just that Ellen and I are sort of bouncing. The military, we're not going to be able to. The kid that's brilliant, we have one at San Luis High right now that could probably walk out of here and start a Facebook company overnight. He's just absolutely, what's his name?
Zoltan.
I think this is valuable data, but I don't think we're, and I don't know how you track a kid that goes out and forms a $2 million computer company overnight.
You hear about that.
Hopefully they stay in San Luis. So I agree that this is valuable data. Unfortunately, you know, I'm not sure where our purple band is going to be in San Luis. This will be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a good start to know that.
Yeah. This is just our attempt to gather more information.
Okay. Thank you.
Next on the agenda is the public hearing, proposed agreement with California School Employees Association, Chapter 89. I believe it's public hearing, so I'm just going to go ahead and open the public hearing. And the public hearing is now closed. Oh, is there anyone who wishes to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, the public hearing is now closed. Item number 2, proposed revisions to board policy 1113, district and school websites. Russell Mellon.
Thank you. Periodically, we get communications from the California School Boards Association with recommendations for updating our board policies. And in this particular case, The board policy dealing with district school websites has some recommended updates from California School Boards Association, and it, excuse me, it's attached for your review and discussion.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, sir. As technology continues to grow and expand, and as we find out that we're not even growing and expanding as much as the students, because I still think it's pretty cool that I open my email every day, and I'm having trouble texting, but I did have a couple of questions on this policy. First, if we could look at the second paragraph, the superintendent or designee may versus shall establish. I'm concerned that if we were to take shall and make it may, that it would be very hard someday to go back and say shall. I had that trouble with my children.
Good point. I would point your attention to the next paragraph down, and it says the superintendent or designee shall develop content guidelines for district and school websites. So, in effect, what we're doing in the first paragraph is allowing for some freedom of design by the school sites, and in the second paragraph, we're giving them parameters to work within.
I think there's a difference here, if I can, and not to be argumentative, but there's a difference between a design and content. And so I just bring it up as a cautionary, and I don't know if the other board members have any interest in changing this or not.
Okay.
But from my point of view, we might want to look at that. My other quick comment is, it's my belief that board policy should be large and policy-oriented and give direction to staff.
Idea about what our expectations are with copyright laws, advertising, and external websites. But it is your website. I mean, it is not your website. It is your policy. So more than happy to change whatever you wish.
So what I'm hearing you say is on design, pictures, whatever, something specific for the site might be best served as a shell, but you're on the content, you're saying, hey, we're going to have calendars, we're going to have our parent newsletters and so on and so forth. Is that how I'm...
Within the administrative regulations, we would point out to the sites things that they probably are expected to include, and calendars would be one of the things. Communication with parents is another. We would want to make sure that those kinds of things are pretty uniform at all schools.
Okay. I would like to suggest something for AI, even though we don't. It's just making sure our newsletters are constantly up to date, because some of the feedback we received at the forums were, oh, I didn't know about the survey or whatever, and then some schools are, oh, three or four people told me about the survey. So some consistency there would be nice. But Jim, you had a question? Mark.
Okay, and one last thing I almost forgot. In the... where the word content is, the paragraph after that. So I think I've now commented on every paragraph, and I apologize. But I haven't even gotten to the back page.
Don't remind him.
Thanks, Alan. I'm planning on sleeping here tonight. So, so if we go from content, we go down to where it says staff, students may submit material for the web to the school webmaster. I'm concerned about creating the concept of a webmaster. If I'm correct, there is no webmaster in the district and no webmaster at school sites, or is that?
Yeah,
we might want to find another term.
I think that an understanding of what webmaster defines would be a good thing. I'm not sure we could talk. You know, your understanding of what a webmaster is might be different than what my understanding of webmaster is.
My problem, exactly.
I tell you what is that we'll look at the ARs and do a better job within the ARs of taking care of that problem.
Okay. And then on the back page, the last paragraph, we talk about district school website shall not post the home addresses and telephone numbers of any elected or appointed official, including but not limited to board members and public safety officials. Earlier in this document, we also talk about not posting emails unless personally agreed to for public safety officials. And I'm just wondering if the word email should be included here as well. It's minor, but it is a board policy.
Privacy rights is a more generalized statement, and then it's talking specifically about district and school websites. Okay, if that's what you want, I think we can accommodate that.
Well, I think as a board member, I really don't care. I mean, most of my stuff's out there in the public. I do constantly turn my Facebook page on and off because I can't seem to control it. But for a public safety official, I think that those three things may be very important to protect,
okay,
to protect them. It's just recommendations to the board at this point.
So, Jim?
Well, I'm not sure what Mark's concern is. It seems to me it's covered both in that paragraph on the front of the sheet of paper, and then again with more specificity in the last paragraph.
I'm thank you, sir, for the opportunity to speak yet again. In the first paragraph, it talks about phone numbers, home addresses, and email addresses. In the last paragraph, it only talks about home addresses and telephone numbers. And I just think that the policy should probably be consistent, or just rely on that first paragraph and eliminate the reference in the last paragraph. So that's all I'm looking for.
Any other comments, discussion, public discussion on this item? So then what I'm hearing is we need to bring it back, or
yes,
do we want a motion? Did Mark, you got your changes?
Okay, it's coming back.
Specified. Okay. So what we'll do is I think it's best if we bring it back with a fuller board. Item number three, proposed revisions to board policy 3580, district records.
Program requires us to have an address card for every student, and when they have an original address card but then become placed in a home or some other safe haven, then there's something called a substitute address card, and it's very confidential, obviously, for very obvious reasons, and that's just basically what they're telling us to do with it.
Are we moving these online? Is that a lot more electronic?
Have we done that yet, Amelia? Have we put these things online?
Not yet.
For the parents? No, not the address cards and emergency cards. Yeah, we had that program going on recently, so it's completed now.
Are you?
Huh?
Go ahead.
But are you going to start storing the information electronically, or is that just written so that down the road we could? Is that how I'm reading this policy?
It can be stored electronically.
Okay.
I have,
and the same rules would apply.
And then did I hear you say you might do an Acrobat Reader for all those blue forms we have at the beginning of the year?
You can do it online. Man. It's easier now.
Yeah, then I just have to change the name of the kid
name
on the top. And
you don't have to put your phone number down 8 times.
Okay, I do have a question about putting all that on electronically. Are we then solely relying on emergency cards that are only available on computers?
No.
Okay, so there's still a paper copy at the school site?
I'll let Amelia answer that.
Yeah, currently, I'm on.
Go up to the microphone.
Hello?
It doesn't work.
Okay.
It works if you see.
That one does.
Currently, we actually do have the forms online, so a parent can pull up the form and fill it out electronically and then print that form and send it into school. We are actually looking at something that would be an online form that would include the current data that we have in our database, so the parent would pull it up and have the current address listed, and the parents would then just simply update any of the information that needed to be updated, and then that data gets transferred back into PowerSchool, which is our current student record database.
So we're looking at what that cost would involve, and that would be a great way to make it easier for parents.
The city uses it for Sun and Fun.
I'm very comfortable with the parental filling it online. I love doing PDFs online. It makes life so much easier filling forms out online. My concern, and when I'm probably not making myself clear, is at the school site, those emergency cards become incredibly valuable. So when they do an emergency drill or they do a fire drill, somebody grabs those forms.
Right.
So I'm just asking, the forms will eventually end up as paper at the school site available to staff.
Correct. And they put them in the CUME folder then at the end of each year.
Just want to make sure we don't melt them when the building burns down.
Okay. Thank you, Ms.
Thank which, you. God forbid, will never happen.
Do we want to bring this back for a second reading? It seems you do want to bring it back. Item number four, the fun of the night. Review of shareholder feedback on proposed initiatives. The team. Dr. Perry.
Is this working? All right. Great. Thank you. I'm going to get us started here, and you know where our little movie is there, right? So before we hit that, the movie, it's been a bit of a whirlwind around here for the last few months. Dr. Prater coming on board, one of the things that he and his team have been working on is to try to navigate or at least set a course for the future direction of our school district and for the accountability measurements that we're going to put in place to do that. And so, as you know, after spending a lot of time with constituents, with stakeholders, with staffs, with parents, community members, members of the board, we came up with 10 bold proposed board initiatives, and the board said go forward, but get some feedback on that. And over the last several weeks, Dr. Prater and his team have been working diligently and trying to access as many points of feedback as possible. We've had community forums where we've elicited information from both staff members and community. Dr. Prater produced a video to let the public know about what's going on. We had some press coverage, and we've spent time with our principals. We've spent time with various groups in our community to gather input and put together a pretty extensive survey that went out to many people to gather input. And the board, as you know, you received some of that survey information in one of these notebooks last week. And as of yesterday, we actually had more of a snapshot. So you had a snapshot last week since, you know, how tough it's been for us.
Look, Mother, it's my life, okay? So if I want to live on a beach and walk around naked...
No. If we want to get Miss Piggy out of jail, we're going to have to catch those thieves red-handed.
Yes, Mo?
What good are other hens now?
Now, we're about to embark on a potentially dangerous mission. There could be physical violence, there could be gunplay, and there's the slightest chance that somebody might even get killed. So if anybody wants out, now is the time to say it.
I'm out.
Me too. Don't we have a gig around here or something?
Yeah, sorry, I got a dental appointment.
It's like this, Kermit. I have to go to work all day.
Shame on you. I thought we were in this thing together. I'm just as scared as you are, but this has to be done.
We don't want the bad guys to win.
We gotta do this for justice, for freedom, for honesty.
Boy, what you seen?
Me too. I feel like 2 cents.
I'm back in.
You can count on me.
Oh, hey, I was only joking. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun to go out there and risk our lives.
Yeah. All for one and one for all.
Yeah.
Time for
I am proud to be an American.
Thank you. I knew I could count on each and every one of you. Fozzie, are you okay?
That took a lot out of me.
Okay. Now, we don't have any time to waste, so everybody gather around. And the first thing we have to do is make our plans.
Right.
All right. Well, yes, we've been spending a lot of time, some sleepless time. I think Rita was actually up all night trying to put this together and synthesize what we're doing. And tonight what we want to do is present our synthesis for your review and input. And we want to start with what we believe is a good graphic representation of what these initiatives are about, because sometimes it's a lot easier to kind of look at a graphic representation than to pore over pages of a document. So we're going to do that first, and then we're going to want to move into a framework that we believe will simplify the message into three R's. We have three R's in a lot of education circles, so we have our own three R's. And then we will then attempt to share some of the generic feedback that seemed to resonate from many disparate viewpoints, and finally to share some suggested changes to the initiatives based on this feedback. And so first I'd like to introduce Amelia, who worked today on a really nice graphic representation of our initiative process.
Okay, thank you.
Look at that.
Thank you. Well, I'm delighted to be here. Amelia Samoz, Technology Director. And today I had an opportunity when we all met this morning with our leadership team to go over the survey results and synthesize those for you this evening. We started brainstorming about the importance of having some type of graphic that would symbolize the initiatives and our core beliefs. So you can see from the puzzle pieces, we have each of the key titles of the initiatives in those pieces. And then surrounding that in the circle is our culture of care that we are excited about growing in our district. And then the last circle on the outside has to do with the three R's that we're focusing on: relationships, relevance, and rigor. I just wanted to share with you who created the graphic for us. It was one of my computer techs. She happens to have a little bit of computer graphics background. So today at the last minute I said, Angela Henderson is her name. So she's our most recent addition to our team. And she came through for us, and she did a really nice job, so I wanted to give her credit for her work. And with that, I think Jackie's going to go next.
We need to take into consideration when we design the initiatives and all the goals, what are the overarching, really important three things that we can be talking about that has a shared meaning that everybody understands. And as Rick, rich culture, we know we need to have the rich data culture, because that is going to guide our instruction for the future. Create the classroom of the future, big relevance. It goes through everything. Just like that circle that you saw of the culture of care, we're going to see that classroom of the future. That's not just technology, but it's also good quality instruction. That's our future. So those were the two under relevance. Rigor is where we see the dynamic instruction in all of the other initiatives. Achieve substantial academic gains with specific populations. You'll see this one, the title has changed a bit. It used to say with most at-risk populations. Now we've changed it a bit. It's achieve substantial academic with substantial populations. Develop preschool and transitional kindergarten programs. We tweaked those words a little bit because it's formally called transitional kindergarten programs. Strengthen district-wide English language arts program. That's part of the rigor. the initiative Develop a World-Class STEM, and you'll hear the word STEM quite a bit. That stands for the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And you probably have read things in the newspaper, watched it on the television. STEM is the one that is the comprehensive world-class math programs. Provide accelerated and specialized learning opportunities, another rigor. And we looked at the survey results, and it was overpowering what we saw, and that is the career pathway. So we included that in the initiative language, increase access to college and career pathways. Relationships, that's you.
All right.
You're in the next one.
So so you can see what we're trying to do is figure out how to synthesize this massive document with all these 10 initiatives and all these subsets under it, and see if we can get it into hone it right down to the classroom and what really is important. And one of the activities we did was to look at hundreds, actually maybe even thousands, of responses and anecdotal responses from our staffs and from the public, and figure out where we can make some sense, where even though there's a lot of divergent thinking, even though there's a lot of opinions out there, what were some of the key, if we took our initiatives and broke them into these areas, what were some of the key things that were coming out of that? And so this is not comprehensive, but I think it is our best attempt, or you know, staff's best attempt to take some of those big ideas that were out there and that were repeated, and that we kind of can see time and time again through some of the anecdotal responses, and see if that helped us inform what we should be doing in terms of maybe changing our initiatives or at least refining our focus. And so, for example, under relationships, we saw that there were many comments in the staff section about establishing trust between our labor groups, our workers, our teachers, our staffs, and management. We saw that in terms of things like interest-based bargaining. And so that's one of the things we need to pay attention to. There seemed to be a near universal appreciation and acceptance for developing a more inclusive school environment. A lot of good responses on that one. Professional accountability and performance are valued by our community. We had a lot of responses from our community about, you know, holding the schools accountable, wanting teachers to do their jobs well. So performance and accountability is a high value in our community. Meeting the needs of all students requires partnerships, interconnectedness, and a willingness to build coalitions for student success. Some of the feedback we saw really, really pointed to the fact that we need to establish connections beyond the walls of our schools, make use of our community resources, our institutions of higher learning, our social service organizations, and other partnerships. As far as the relevant section, the areas that fell under that, you're doing great with moving those things. Thanks. Providing ample and adequate tools and supports to accomplish the objectives was a common theme among all stakeholder groups. You know, things like, where's the money? How are you going to find the time and the resources to do this? It was very clear that we need to make sure that when we start focusing our priorities, we figure out how the budget and the time resources sent to those missions. Providing technology in the classroom received a lot of praise. However, especially among the public, there were concerns regarding the cost of implementation and policies relating to access for staff, and you know, kind of some questioning about technology being a big focus, which is a surprising thing and probably a good thing for us to pay attention to. There was also a big area as far as the initiatives, and some of the feedback we saw in there was overall, there seemed to be widespread agreement that math is a very important focus. In fact, if you were to take, there was a section on our survey where you could actually, people were sort of able to force rank from a Likert 1 through 10 scale and where the most importance was. When we looked at those figures in both the staff surveys and in the parent community surveys, the highest scoring section, if you will, was mathematics. But we also heard a lot of comments, both in our forums and in the feedback we received, on broadening that initiative. Where's the science? Where's the technology initiative? That's why you see that STEM piece put in there. Staff suggested they'll need professional development and time. Again, that whole idea that it's fine to have all these initiatives, but we need to make sure we build in professional development and time, especially around things like the use of you know, data culture and you know what that all means. Again, this is just kind of a thread through there. Community conveyed a strong interest in high-quality instruction. And there is seems to be very clear agreement. We heard loud and clear that the importance of building multiple measurement system into what we're doing that's independent and separate from the STAR, the AYP, the CST scores at the end of the school year. And you'll see that when we rewrote some of those subsets, we kind of refocused that to put more of our energy on multiple measures of student performance. Because what we know is that assessments are tools that are going to improve both individual student learning, but also as a means to inform better instruction. The preschool, you know, pre-kindergarten, early learning initiatives were seem to have pretty high acceptance. Again, the only questions about that one seem to be in the area of resources, about you know, where are you going to spend, how are you going to spend your money on this. The community seemed to be very energized in the prospect of accelerated opportunities, magnet school concepts, especially in grades 4 through 12. Among our staffs, there were far more questions about things like advanced placement, international baccalaureate, but our community seems to be very interested in expanding our accelerated opportunities. And we did hear that there's concern about the focus on, you know, one group of students or a certain group of students that could compromise support for another group of students. In other words, our initiatives seem to be focused on students who we might consider to be at risk or on students who need acceleration, even though I think throughout it we want to weave that we want to accelerate all students. But there's always that concern about, well, what about those students in the middle? Make sure we're not losing our focus on all, which is why we actually put in that little graphic, all means all. Writing across the curriculum emerged as a very important need. And I think that might be it. Now what Rita is going to do is actually show you some of the edits or rewrites that we did based on this feedback to some of the actual initiatives to kind of be more responsive to what we're seeing.
Let's see. Oh, yes, it's on. Right. It's on, as my son says. First, I just want to publicly thank all of our community members and our staff members who participated in the survey. I mean, we did spend a lot of time reading all of the comments, and it was really valuable. It always is, whether people agree or not. It's just the best way to gather information and really begin conversations as important as the one we're having. What I'm providing for you are just three examples of our preliminary work in revising some of our initiatives based on the feedback that we have received. You can see that we've changed. So when you see it in turquoise, it's a new change, and in pink, it's a deletion. As was mentioned, we've changed the wording of that initiative because part of the feedback we received was that maybe at risk wasn't a label that was going to help our students or make our students and parents feel good about themselves. So we changed that to what it really is, specific student populations. And that first part of A, it used to be we just went directly to the percentages, right, an AYP and that type of measure, and instead we've added a sex, gender, and color, and race, do we not? And what you see there in turquoise was actually provided in the feedback, and I thought it was just wonderful statement, so that we create culturally competent learning environments. And you can see defined as a process in which individuals and organizations integrate and transform awareness of assumptions, values, biases, and knowledge about themselves and about others to respond respectfully and effectively across diverse cultures and language and socioeconomic status and race and so forth. And that last sentence really stood out to me also, that cultural competence recognizes, affirms, fosters, and values the strengths of individuals, families, and communities, and protects and preserves the worth and dignity of each. You can provide feedback afterwards if you like, but I just thought that was very encompassing and embracing of us as members of a community. And then the last sample I wanted to share with you is Initiative 5. As we received, and was mentioned, we received input about including science and technology and engineering along there. And so way down below you see B. We haven't drafted it yet. I think we'll include other people in coming up with that next step of how we can integrate science and technology and engineering into this math program that we want to create. So these are just some of the examples of how we have taken the feedback and revised our initiatives.
So that's what we've done the last couple of days, taking this pile of information and trying to synthesize it, simplify it, not lose anything, be responsive to the feedback we're getting. And you can see it's a work in progress. You can see that even though at some point we want to kind of call it and say these are initiatives, this is what we're working on, but we know full well we're going to be revisiting and revisiting this and tweaking it as we go along. But what we want to do is make sure that the board gets our best thinking on all these edits in your Friday packet, not just the three that you have, but you know actually where we think we should land at this point. So we'll get that to you. But at this point, we really want to open it up to your questions, feedback, comments about things we may have missed in the synthesis from the things you've read, or any questions you might have or any discussion you might have about kind of where we are in the process at this point. And I'm going to go sit back down so we can all answer questions.
Well, it sounds like you guys have done quite a bit of work, been at it, and so now I think the board is anxious to comment and provide feedback. And so we'll start with ladies first. Alex?
Yeah, thank you a lot for doing this. This is a very exciting project to be part of as a trustee, and I appreciate the work very much and am proud to be associated with it. So thank you all. I see that we're adding the STEM, which is great. It makes a lot of sense. I want to just find out if we're adding a lot to other of the initiatives, other subparts, or, you know, we're adding subparts on the Initiative 5. And I wanted to see if we were adding much, you know, additional subparts and no additional initiatives. Okay, we have a big plate here.
That's why we're
okay.
Ellen, what we're really trying to do is condense and simplify,
okay,
without losing the meat behind the objectives.
Right, because we will have to address what many are anxious to hear, which is the how. So I also appreciate very much and am excited about the fact that this is so collaborative on so many levels, that once we have assimilated the input from employees, from staff, from the community, from families, that we will indeed have a product that everyone who has wanted to, I hope, has had an opportunity to contribute to. And then I think it also provides the support that is needed by all to help our teachers and our students feel held by all of us as they go through the changes they need to make. And
it's me, because I'm sure I missed a lot of it. I do have some specifics. I'd like to do some and then relinquish the mic and then come back. Is that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, thank you, sir.
30 seconds.
What I really want to... One of the things that came out for me strongly and that I saw up here was the looking to build collaborations out in the community. It's been my experience in the district that we often feel that when we identify a problem that we are responsible for fixing it. And there's so much richness in our community and so many people that are willing to work. There's 1,000 nonprofit organizations in San Luis Obispo County. Many, many, many of them aimed at helping families and youth. And for me, it's very exciting to hear us say that we're going to be looking outside our boundaries and going out and reaching out to those other organizations for support. Our job's to educate, and there are other organizations out there that are more than willing to help us with some of the others. So I was very happy to see that. I'm going to be looking... I think it's at initiative number 5. I'm very excited about the inclusion of STEM. How do I put this? As I continue to go through the initiatives, the VAPA staff in this district has done such a remarkable job that it's almost as if they're not here because it's been so remarkable. I mean, at one of the concerts this year, we had sixth graders performing with high school students on stage. So as I struggled with this, I went and started looking for something. And there's a movement evidently starting in the country. It's in Virginia right now and being used. And what they did is they talked to the president of IBM. They talked to Lockheed and... both medical schools, I found, now require that in order to be a doctor, you have to have a fine arts strand going through the whole program. And so what they've done is they've changed STEM to STAM. I'm sorry, thank you.
Is that picking up steam?
Yeah, it's picking up steam. I was very excited to find... they're now making it STEAM. Thank you, and I'm sure they'll eventually call it STREAM. But for right now, it's STEAM, and they've added the A for arts. And I don't know if it's going to throw us way off track, or maybe that letter B that's not filled in yet can sort of look at this, because art education seems to be what stimulates creativity. And IBM and Lockheed and those corporations are saying, I can get an engineer off the shelf, but if I can get an engineer with creativity, then I'm getting what I need to keep my company alive and well and move on into the future. So I will put in an effort to have that somehow worked in if we can. And I'm going to leave my other questions. And
Mr. Q?
Well, I want to echo... what Mark has said and Ellen has said. And I'm just a little bit resentful that you guys did such a great job of anticipating many things that I was going to bring up in your presentations. I think you did a great job on that. And again, I realize more than ever just how much work you folks have put in on this. Just the fact that I was going through the initial responses, and it took me a very long time. I can't imagine what it would be like with an additional 200 more comments and responses. So, again, thank you very much.
Just curious, on some of the feedback, I noticed a lot of feedback on special ed. And so did you guys find a specific, sort of I'm looking for, idea, a common thread?
Well, some of the central themes behind the inclusion concept were poignant. I'm not so sure that that the initiatives were designed or developed clearly enough, so it elicited sort of this response by some. That I'm not sure reflected the true intent. Meant to be appropriate, safe, and inclusive to the greatest extent possible. And I think the way when we try to measure that and put it into the initiative as in that way, I think it startled people, both staff and community. Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at examples in our district that I think are working well, you'll see the spirit behind it. And I think that was the intention, and it still remains the intention behind the initiatives. It's just hard to convey that clearly enough when you're doing this broadly.
Yeah, I think when I read it, it said that staff will look at students individually. You know, that's how I took it. And then So one thing I had some phone calls on, and then I read on the survey. Second thing, I really love that logo. That would go nicely on a coffee cup instead of a bell and a seagull. I don't get the bell and the seagull, but that's just me.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's beautiful. Yeah, really good on.
That was
teamwork. That looks great.
That was a nice effort.
So. You guys, the amount of work you did is tremendous. I have to. Jim said you stole some of his ideas. Well, I guess the great minds think alike. Is stole some of mine too. good job, guys. Do we have more questions, or can I continue? Do you have more comments?
Yeah, I just would like to, if I could. You know, I frequently put my team in places where they're probably uncomfortable. And today, yesterday, well, last 3 to 4 months are examples of that. And today, what I saw with members of our team, what I saw was a real reflection of their professionalism, their ability to synthesize at a deeper level and pull tremendous amount of information and then consolidate it into general big ideas and themes is a difficult task. And then to bring it into a symbolic representation that accurately or comes close to reflecting our intent in pursuing these initiatives, I think they really did a wonderful job of capturing that. And you know, I have to commend the group. They took this to, I think, a very deeper place today. And what you're seeing is the beginning of that. And I think it's hard to convey in forums what the intention behind this is, but it's there. It's a focus on kids in the classrooms where it happens every day. And if we could generate all of our energy onto that, we'll be doing a tremendous service. And I think this reflects the intent behind the initiatives. There's nothing fancy behind it other than this. And what we're trying to capture and consolidate really are big ideas into a focused intent on kids. And that's what we're trying to accomplish here. And what we'll come up with after this, of course, after we adopt these, the intent then is Russell and our team comes behind that with a focused analysis on resource allocation, what we can do to accomplish these things in a pragmatic, realistic way without compromising the fiscal integrity of our district at a very difficult time. But I think this symbol here reflects what's at stake. And that's what will come April, May, and June. Is you'll get to weigh in on those things, and then the how begins. And the how will involve the people in our organization that are working with the kids, because that's the most important work.
Thank you. Do we have some more feedback at this time?
I would hate to put a whole lot more feedback in there because the remarks are just what I needed to hear. I would like to add one other thing, and it's, I guess, a compliment. And when we're asking staff and we're asking the community to create a data-rich, and when we're asking people to take risks, and then we have the administration leading by example. This was an incredible data gathering, a lot of qualitative data, but a lot of data gathering, and it was a major risk. And I just want to compliment you all because you're leading by example.
So what's next on our plan then for this particular set of initiatives?
So this Friday, in the Friday packet, I will include the remaining information as promised. I will, if this is the symbolic component we're going to use, the intention then is to create hyperlinks, if you will, on the website for these, where people can click on each of the pieces of those puzzles, and the initiatives with the measurements will come out, and people can view them. And Rick further suggested, I thought was wonderful, that we could create video links from each of those reflecting our own people doing work with our kids. So examples of empowering professional groups in our district, examples of preschools in motion, examples of STEM or math or English language arts, comprehensive literacy, professional working groups, that whole concept could be digitalized, if you will, and people could click on there and see a video of it, of our people doing it in action. So it becomes real. I believe the buy-in will come when people begin to see themselves in these puzzles, and they can naturally see how they connect to it. The culture of care is going to be a giant effort in terms of building trust, building awareness, using data to not scare people but empower them. These are the things I see that coming our way. So between now and April 5th, I would welcome the opportunity to meet with each of you and gather more feedback and review those final initiatives, if you will, prior to April 5th. And then after April 5th, our next board meeting is May 10th, I believe, and so that's there's spring break in there, and so the idea is that we will move right into the budget kind of development phase, and so Russell will be in charge of that, and he'll bring these components. He's been a great team player in all of this. While we're speaking about synthesizing, he's thinking of how to channel funding and resources to support these things. So he's been instrumental in that process. And so we then figure out the simultaneously what we're choosing to fund and support and why. We go into the summer. My hope is to have some summer planning teams of staff and administrators and classified to begin to make sense of the how, so that our year in 11-12 is a big success. I'm a huge planner. I believe summer planning objectives are hugely important to a successful school year. And that's a significant piece of that. So that's why the movement on this is so swift. So that 11-12, our teachers feel clear, they feel supported, and they feel empowered to do these things. That's what I see 11-12 being about, but we have to start now. So that's why it feels so compressed. I could have selected to wait a year and just continue this process for another year till I got everybody on board, but the truth is, this is really good stuff, really important, and the what is critical, but the how is much more important. Because these whats are pretty difficult to debate in terms of what the research says, what best practices say, what we as educators know is important. So for that, I believe we've taken the right steps. It's always kind of a scary thing, as the Muppets video suggested. It's scary, but it's necessary. So that's what I think will lead us into the summer, and I believe will lead us into a successful 11-12. Does that help?
I think so. That was a little bit more than I asked. But
sorry, Phil.
But I also think you will, I believe by Friday we will have the, at least the first blush rewrite of all the initiatives ready for you, so you don't have to wait too long to see what we believe needs to be rewritten.
Yes, and yeah. You'll have this rendition, and you'll have the synthesized feedback that Rick shared out. You'll have all that for your review to enjoy your weekend.
And just, I'm sorry, thank you, sir. And just to make Kim's job even worse, could we get it the way you presented it here so we can see what's new and what's been deleted and what's been changed?
Yes.
Thank you.
Kim always does that. Well, I think some of the feedback we got, or at least I received, but I would probably say I can speak for all, is why now? You know, the budget's terrible, and oh, these numbers are so hard. You know, they're very high, and what I see is right now is the perfect time. You know, public education, it's our taxpayer dollars, and we can go out there and say, this is what we're doing with your money. You know, we're taxing, we're asking for more, we're asking to keep these. Can't speak. Item 8, acceptance of donations. Item 9, approval of purchase orders. Nothing is pulled.
I move approval of the action consent items.
I second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item number 11. Here we go. Advance agenda. Mr. Buck or Mr. Q.
No. Okay. Not to seem humorous, but I think it's been called to our attention tonight that we have a little work to do on our cell phone electronic media policy and getting consistency. So I would like to see us. Alan and I would like to see.
Is it, Mr. Q.
Okay. I would like to see us bring that forward and take a look at that. It was good work, and I think we need to look at it.
It'd be nice to see a representative or two from Pack Beach on that student team on revising that if we choose to go that route, and I would support Mr. Buckman on getting that on the advanced agenda. Any other advanced agendas? I actually had one. I was going through board policies today and looking for the cell phone policy, actually, because I knew it was coming. And I found board policy 0200, board goals 2000 to 2005. And so I think given the discussion, we need to go ahead and change board policy 0200. I could pass to Rick or Eric. They're good, but they're old. And as I was lugging the heavy binder looking for board policies, I'm just wondering when the electronic board agendas might be coming forward.
Well, I'm so glad you asked that, Phil. The goal, and I'd like to, of course, discuss this with you probably next board meeting in April, is to lay it out so that we could have a sort of a paperless agenda system and to provide electronic tools necessary for that to occur to each board member so that we could save countless hours of Kim's time, countless hours of staff time, so each board member would have an electronic device to be determined with a paperless system so that you're working from your electronic device. My goal is to have that in place sometime this summer.
Okay. That's good to know. I was wondering, there's a few board members who have iPads, and I haven't asked about it, but is there a way they can look at their agenda on an iPad and also do the sticky note feature. Is that something Kim can initiate so maybe Mr. Buckman can pilot it or whoever? Somebody else has it. Put your work. Something to that effect.
There are several companies making electronic agenda systems available, including CSBA. And to my knowledge, right now, the sticky pad option is not available on the iPad version, but they're modifying these all the time. So
he needs a sticky pad.
I'm sure it'll come.
You have a comment on that?
If I can come have a cup of coffee with you, and I'll bring my iPad.
Cool. No other advanced agenda, so reports by board members. Put you to work, Mark. Sorry.
Yes, I have a short report, I hope. Friday on the 4th of March, I got a chance to drive the golf team to Paso, the Morro Bay High School golf team. Just wanted to mention kudos or a shout out to the building grounds and maintenance folks. The van that one of the vans that we were supposed to take had a very badly worn tire with the radial metal tread showing, but Mr. Bedrigian, who's the golf team coach, noticed it, and we sent it back to the garage there, to the bus barn, and I used my own vehicle. But the good thing is that within a week, that whatever the suspension or steering problem and the tire were replaced, and the van was right back in action. So he appreciated, and we all appreciate that that Bruce was so observant and that it was taken care of in such a timely manner. Also, I learned a lot about the kind of arcane rules of competition golf, so it was fun. The Rotary, I got a chance to attend the Rotary.
Just a brief report that I spent some time attending the some of the forums, DLAC, the San Luis Teacher Forum in this room, the community forum in this room. They were very interesting, worthwhile to hear again the support and interest and questions presented were on target, and again, I think the initiatives are going to do great things for our students. So appreciated the opportunity to do that. And then I am volunteering in the Bishop's Peak Library every Friday and started that last Friday. And that was really, it was just so wonderful to be around the kids and the books and in the computer lab. So that was really fun. I'm looking forward to doing that for a couple of months. And then attended the Teach fundraiser breakfast Saturday morning at Applebee's. And again, that community support is so great to see from see them give up their or contribute to a fundraiser in that way with the space and the letting us use the room and everything. It was great. So, again, pulling the community together at these with education is wonderful. So it's been a good couple weeks. Thanks.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you, sir. Echoing Ellen yet again. The forums were wonderful to attend. I would really like to thank the parents and teachers, staff, classified administration who've helped me and given me the time to discuss the initiatives with them, to attend a number of the forums. I also want to just mention that I did attend a three-day state PTA Board of Managers meeting. Budget was the hot topic, other legislation, and there was an update on the federal elementary school, the ESEA update, and I would like I'd like to send that to you and possibly send it out with the Friday memo. And it's great to be here.
And we've been a busy board. I think I speak for all. So we went to several schools, got a lot of feedback. I know I went to Los Osos Middle School, and they had something called the Book-a-Palooza. Is where everybody inside, and this is goes to your culture of caring. Every student at the school read this book, Percy Jackson. I didn't get a chance.
The Lightning Thief.
Thank you, The Lightning Thief. And not only did students read it, but teachers, community members. There was a groundskeeper from the Los Osos area who cuts grass at Monarch Grove. Not only did he read it, but he gave a poetry lecture with some of the kids based on the, and I wish I could remember his name, Kevin. Oh man, just awesome guy. And I sat in his presentation. It was great. There was people from the Los Osos community, improv theater, and the kids were given little roles. It was so great to see all the excitement. Visited Los Ranchos, Bishop's Peak, and got a lot of good feedback on initiatives and what's going on in the district. And Mr. Evans gave me an earful. That was really nice of him. And the Teach Breakfast, the host was a really nice guy. Was that looked kind of like you, Dr. Brady?
Who's this?
The host at the Teach Breakfast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Black shirt.
I like that shirt. You look good. So, I welcome the opportunity to go visit more sites, and then I got a chance to speak with Nancy Blackburn on the phone today, and I like visiting sites, but she said, you know what, board members rarely get out to we come to the district office and we go up to Eric's to see what Kim has for us, you know, keep us in line, but it'd be nice to go out and visit some of the student services and IS&T, so just throwing it out there for you guys. And I think if you check your calendars, I'm not sure on the day, Los Osos Middle School is having a multicultural festival. I think it's the 23rd, but I'm not sure, so you guys will have to check that if you're interested. I believe that is it. Are we adjourned? We're adjourned. Excellent.
Thank you, everybody.